Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 99-year-old Bill Biggers of Fresno, California, meeting up at his favorite spot, the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor in downtown Fresno, where he volunteers as a docent every Tuesday. The museum is open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and admission is always free. Bill spent most of World War II helping to grow produce that would feed our soldiers around the world. But in early 1945, he left his wife and newborn son behind in California and headed overseas with the Army. Had you ever been on a ship before, Bill?
No, that was my first and the last time, I wanted to be, but I had several others besides that. Yeah, one of them was the USS Barnstable. And that's what it felt like, too. It was not a good ship.
Did it smell like a Barnstable?
Well, it didn't smell very good.
Well, tell me about it. So what do you remember about shipping out and headed overseas?
Well, it took us 30 days to get over there because of zigzag.
From San Francisco to Manila?
Yeah. Well, we stopped. There were three ships of us, and we'd had an escort all the way. And we backed up into an island or someplace out there in the Pacific for camouflage. And the next morning, we head out, the three ships, no escort, one right behind the other. Navy guy said we're top speed, and we went right through the war zone and to Manila. I can't understand how we made it, but we did.
And when you say that, you know, before you had escort, now you don't. There's the threat of Japanese submarines all along that way.
Oh, yes. Plus, they still had a few bombers, too, you know.
Sure. The threat aircraft, from the air as well. Uh-huh. And did you get seasick at all?
No. Just the sailors got seasick.
Army's immune to it?
Well, I'll leave out part of that.
Feel free.
Going over, we didn't do, there's four of us didn't want to do calisthenics, you know. We hid out in lifeboats just hanging over the side, and the Navy guys brought our food to us.
How long did you get away with that?
All the way.
30 days?
Well, we only stayed that during the daytime. We went down and sat.
So you never once had to do calisthenics.
But we got to be good card players, I'm telling you.
So you hid in the lifeboats
every
day, and nobody ever found you?
Nobody ever tried.
I wonder if anybody who's listening is going to try to get away with that at some point. It's like straight out of the movies or something.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, we landed in Manila, in Luzon. There were still firefights. There's still some fighting going on, especially in Wall City. We went out by rail, and we went 19 kilometers from Manila to a little village called Alabang. It consisted of just a few stands along selling sarsaparilla and Cokes. And then we went further in from Alabang. One morning, First Sergeant come in to our tent, and he says, "Biggers, get dressed. We got a mission to go to." This is at 3:30, and he said, "The truck will be leaving at 4. The only thing I asked him, "Shall I bring the M1 or the carbine?" Although I was assigned to a bigger gun, a Browning automatic, but that's not good in the jungle fighting. It's too big, too heavy. So he said, "Bring the M1. So that's what I brought, was the M1. We get on that truck, and 8 hours later, we stopped. We was in pretty heavy jungle type thing area, and the road was good. But I was in the back with another soldier I did not know, American soldier. And I think we had 8 Filipino guerrilla fighters and the first sergeant and the truck driver. And we stopped to rest and have a bite to eat, and all hell broke loose. Because what we were after was the main body of the Japanese had surrendered, but we had these ones that skipped out, got away, and they were causing a lot of trouble, and we were up there to find them.
So these are some Japanese who didn't want to surrender, who then went further back, and you had to kind of round them up, or that was the hope anyway.
That was the hope, yeah, but they found us before we found them.
So you're thinking you're taking a lunch break, and when did you know that's not what was happening?
Very shortly. We didn't get to eat anything.
Because they started firing on you.
Firing started coming, but it was very fortunate because we were somewhat protected unless they came over the hill. It was just some small risings, but our truck never got hit. This American soldier that was with me, we crawled about, I'd say close to 100 feet down through the jungle. There was a trail there, but we didn't want to get on the trail because we could be seen. So we crawled down to the waterfront. We had noticed this every once in a while you could see this water. It was not running, it was just standing water. And the Japanese were on the other side of that.
So you crawled down there on your bellies?
On our bellies.
The enemy is still firing in your direction?
Oh, yeah. Now we could be seen. Now he and I could. I don't know what happened to the other people at that time because they never came down.
So they might have stayed with the truck.
Evidently, I don't think the Filipinos did because when we got back the truck after a couple hours, there were no Filipinos around.
But for a couple hours, you're in a situation you've never been in before.
Absolutely. It's not like when you're in basic training, when you crawl underneath that wiring, you know, and they're firing above you, telling you that it's live ammunition, but it's probably blanks. But that was live, and we knew it.
How close was it coming to you?
Not really that close, because it was heavy jungle where we had crawled down, and we separated probably 20 feet apart, because if they spotted one, then we might not sight the other one, you know. And we were pretty well hid, and we had plenty of ammo.
But there's only two of you.
Only two of us.
And you don't know how many of the Japanese there are.
Have no idea, because across this water, it'd be hard for me to estimate how across it was that water. And it wasn't running, it's just standing water, muddy. They were in we thought it was an island out in this water. That's what it looked like to us. And that was grown up with banana trees, and they were inside that. You couldn't see anybody.
So what were those 2 hours like? What kind of things were you doing, and what were you dealing with?
Well, it was just a gunfight. That's all you can say about it. And they never did get close to us because we were pretty well hid. I don't know. So finally we figured either they escaped or we, you know, telling what happened. We didn't know what happened because we wouldn't dare get out into that water because, first place, we didn't know how deep it was. And if it was not very deep, we'd be standing objects, you know.
With no cover.
No cover, and we didn't want to duck down in that muddy water because we didn't know what else was in that muddy water either.
So after a couple hours, you don't know if you've hit any of them. You don't know if they've gotten away.
Oh, yeah, we were pretty sure we hit them.
Well, this is why I'm asking the questions.
Yeah, we were pretty sure we hit him. We saw some kind of an automatic weapon coming out. We could see we could see that firing. We couldn't see the ones that were using with rifles or whatever, but we saw that automatic weapon. I don't even know what it was. It's just like a machine gun, but it was automatic, you know. And we both fired at that, and it dumped out into the water. So we knew that one was gone. But finally, the gunfire stopped. Then we found out that was not an island. It was just an outcropping, I guess you'd call it, into this water.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't know how many got away.
Thinking it's an island and they'd have to go through the water, but afterwards you found out they could have backed out where you couldn't see.
Yeah, we couldn't see where they went back to land. It was a peninsula, in other words.
Mm-hmm. So the gunfire stops. I imagine that's kind of a nervous deal to figure out when it's safe to move.
Yeah. We wait. We give it plenty of time. We'd fire a couple of rounds in just to make sure. We didn't get any return fire, so we assumed it. So we started back. On the way back, we come across two recently killed Japanese soldiers. How they were killed, I don't know. But it was very recent. And it didn't seem like they might have came from, I don't know how they got across that water, because we didn't see any way to get across on land the water. They were dry. Their clothes were dry. Anyway, we left them. You know, we went on to our thing. And when we got back to our truck, there were no Filipinos. And the first sergeant was a basket case. The truck driver had tried to keep him safe. They got in behind the wheels of the truck, just in case. And that's where we found the truck driver and the first sergeant. But the first sergeant was a basket case, really. He had gone berserk, but we later found out that was his first trip overseas. He had always been in a unit in the States.
So the two of them had stayed with the truck the whole time.
They stayed in the truck the whole time, yeah. And we tried to find the Filipinos, but we never found them. I don't know where they went. But anyway, we found a place we could turn that truck around and head it back to base. But that lasted about 22 hours altogether, the time we got back to the base.
Sounds like that might have been one of the longest days of your young life.
Well, you know, I was raised in church. I was not a guy that went out drinking and all that jazz all my life. I had been raised in church, and you won't believe this, but the first thing I thought of when the gunfire started was the 23rd Psalms. Mm-hmm. Hey, we'll walk through the valley of death. I fear, have no fear, and I had no fear.
Wow. There's something that you felt in that
moment.
I
felt I was safe. Mm. I really did.
You get back from that firefight. You said, your first sergeant was a basket case, I think is the word you used.
Yes, he was shipped home.
And I guess maybe partly because of what happened to him, you had some issues you had to straighten out where they thought were absent without leave?
Well, this first sergeant, I never get to know him, just that one trip is all I had with him. Mm-hmm. But he had failed to enlist us. I don't know about the Filipinos, where he enlisted them or not, but this other soldier and I were AWOL. It took a little while to get that straightened out because he's a basket case.
So he's not in the kind of mental state to clear anything up.
No.
You're not recorded anywhere on paper as having left for that mission.
No, the only thing that saved us was the truck driver.
So he vouched for you.
Yeah, he vouched for us, yeah.
Otherwise, you would have been in big trouble.
We would have been in big trouble. The only thing that really upset me about it, because the first sergeant had not listed as anything about it, we never got the medal for being in a firefight.
The combat infantry badge?
Combat infantry badge, we never got that. That really stuck with me, because we should have got it.
Maybe you still could. But what about the surrender and how you heard about that and what that meant to you?
Well, we had shipped back to our company. This happened on Luzon. We shipped down to Leyte. No action down on Leyte. I think we were there 2 or 3 weeks. And then we went down to Mindanao, where the 121st was stationed. They were back on R&R. We had some incidents of the enemy slipping up and shooting into the unit, but nobody ever got hit. Mm. Because you soon learn, don't stand up. You might have a hole in the tip, but that's better than have a hole in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, with that. And we had, at that time, we had quite a few Japanese prisoners there, too. But they gave us no trouble. Mm-hmm. No trouble. They was glad to be fed. And
when word came that Japan had surrendered, was that something that meant something to you?
Yeah, I imagine we got it fairly quick. I don't really remember. We were expecting it, because they'd already dropped the atomic bomb, and we were expecting it any time. The only thing you had to worry about was the food we were getting was not good. For a month, we had nothing but Spam. That poor cook had tried fixing Spam every possible way you could fix Spam. Anyway, after the war ended and we went to Japan, it's hard to believe this, but of course I was in the headquarters now. After about 2 weeks, we took over a Japanese base, which is right near the town of Okayama. So about 2 weeks, the four of us, it was the card-playing nuts from...
The lifeboat crew?
From the lifeboat crew. We decided we'd walk into town. The town had been hit very, very hard. Very hard. It had been pretty well damaged. We heard from the Japanese that there's planes of bombers over that for about 7 hours straight. Not just American, but other bombers, too. And it had been hit pretty hard, but as we walk into this little town, the main part of town, some of the business part, hadn't been hit that hard. But the town had burnt because they knocked out the water. And it's an oceanfront town. Had been hit that part, but there's only one building standing in a big Vance area there. One building, a two-story building. And you won't believe this. Hmm. Gospel music. Although they were singing in Japanese, we knew the songs. So we joined them.
Wow.
Yeah, we went in and we were taking off our boots, and we saw a little girl peek out from upstairs because they were upstairs, and then she went back in. And then we found out later that she went back in, and the pastor of the church asked her, what's going on? She says, American soldiers. What are they doing? They're taking their boots off. He says, that sounds good, because we know they're friendly now because they're following our customs.
Mm-hmm.
So we joined them, and we sang with them.
Some hymns that you had sung in church
growing
up. Oh,
yeah, that we knew that. And you, the funny part about this, four of us, I was raised in the Assembly of God. One guy was a Baptist. One guy was a Church of Christ. And the fourth guy was a Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So what a team.
Got all your bases covered.
Got all our bases covered. So we joined them after the service, the pastor. Well, just after that, they followed our customs like we do. They all joined hands so the circle won't be unbroken, and had prayer. And so we took this little Japanese girl, looked like she's probably 18, 19 years old, and I took her hand and my soldiers, and we all joined hands. And then after the pastor came back, and of course we had the books, you know, from Japanese to American, American to Japanese. And he came back and tried to talk to us a little bit. And the little girl that I sat next to, she invited us to their home.
Mm.
So we went to their home. They wanted to give us something to eat. They had nothing to speak of.
Mm.
They had put on the ranch we called horse beans. I don't remember the real name of them, but it's a big bean like a lima, only a little larger.
Mm-hmm.
And they baked those. They open up and you eat the kernel inside. That gave us an idea. We could buy food at the PX. Very reasonable. I can remember the one thing I can vaguely remember was Sacramento tomato juice. A big old can, probably a quart or maybe bigger, 15 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So we took a lot of food to them.
Mm.
A lot of food, because they were starving. At our camp, we'd go out after we ate, you know, and the Japanese men, 50, 60 years old, digging the garbage for food. Well, the four of us didn't do that. If it's something we didn't particularly want or didn't, like a slice of bread, we didn't throw it in the garbage. So they brought, they realized the four of us wasn't going to throw it in the garbage, so they'd bring buckets so they could put the good food in.
Mm.
So we took a lot of food to those to that family. And I told this girl very plainly now, we brought you this food, and don't you sell it. If we bring you more than you want, you want to give it to your friends, that's all right. But don't you sell it. We gave it to you because you were hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, they never sold that. So we stayed there, visited with that Japanese family and other Japanese family, not just them,
mm-hmm.
all the time. We were the 11 months I was in that service. And, of course, two of the guys, the four of us, two of them were single and two of us were married. And we were truthful with them because we told them we were married and there was, you know, nothing going on between us and the family. And I can remember when I got my shipping orders. Well, they thought I overstepped that. We were moving from Okayama down to Nagasaki. Then they thought we were going home. And these two girls, the older one and the younger one, come. And they found us as we were getting on the train. And they said to me, Bill-san, Maureen and Ronnie say, Bill, come home. We say, Bill, stay. So anyway, no, we went down then to Nagasaki, and I left and come home from Nagasaki. I saw the devastation there. I didn't see much in Nagasaki, but they stopped the train there. We wasn't allowed to get off, but you sure see the devastation. We stopped at the railroad station, and just nothing but a few walls left standing.
That experience where you and your friend, well, three of your friends, you stumble into this church, and they're singing the hymns, and their words are Japanese, but you know the tune, and you're singing along. Is there something that that moment, that experience taught you, or when you think back on it now, it makes you realize?
Well, the thing that I realized about it, it wasn't the Japanese people. It was the government that was rotten. We never had 1 minute's problem with the Japanese people. Not one problem at all. Now, this family, their father had been killed in Manchuria when that war was going on. It seemed to me that the civilians were nice people.
It's time for our final break, but there's much more to come with 99-year-old Bill Biggers, including that chance to finally come home and see his wife and son again. He would spend most of his professional life with the Fresno Police Department. In fact, he is the oldest living retired officer from that department. Check out photos and a video of one of Bill's wildest police stories online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.